And now, leading off today's show, Field Mole Desiree Helliger speaks with activists at Occupy ICE PDX about the action that began on the evening of June 17th, Father's Day, and helped touch off a nationwide movement to occupy and abolish immigration and customs enforcement.
Friday, June 22nd.
Antonio Zamora, I happened to be here on Father's Day when, after the Democratic Socialists of America rally got done, there were some folks hanging still around the ICE office, and I think you kind of initiated a general assembly to talk a little bit about strategy, and this ICE occupation, occupying ICE, came out of that conversation.
Yeah, after the DSA, Democratic Socialists of America, had the rally, very, very powerful rally with very strong words spoken about this issue of how people are treated in the ICE detentions across this country, how children were locked up in essentially large dog kennels, which is still likely happening right now. This vigil became a mass vigil in several occasions here, and many people have come out and listened. First morning, I was woken up by a camera crew. I stood around for maybe an hour after I woke up. You see, I actually work 50 hours a week. I work at two different locations in the city of Portland. I'm very committed in my life to make a world difference. I work as a farmer. I am a farmer. I'm learning how to be a farmer. And I work as a dispatcher at a day labor center for international workers' rights. You know, this life of creating beautiful trouble is worth risking my life because I wish to see dreams come true and the world to change. So now here we are on the second day, if I may continue saying, and the second day there were probably about 100 people, vaguely speaking. And then after that, on the third day, there was like 1,000 people. This CN gente came, you know, like 1,000 people came out, and it was just like, wow. I really just believe spirit brought us together out of prayer. And I really believe if we keep the prayers up, people will come. So please pray for the vigil. Pray for the country to pray for its sins of 527 years. Pray for the families to come back together and release out of jail, out of ICE custody right now. Pray for this whole nation to come together and move past violence more and more every day. Pray for ICE detention centers across the nation to have more occupations as there are growing right now. Have a prayer and set off a vigil and let's take action right now.
So there were, I heard there were three Shabbats today on site at the ICE center. Have there been, and last night actually there were Aztec dancers, there was a drum circle.
Right.
So there's been, you know, various forms of spiritual expression here.
Yes.
Am I missing ones? Have clergy been around? Have you noticed other?
No, you hit everything on the spot. It takes a lot of work to create a space that welcomes anyone. We're just about family, and we're all family.
Can you say more about why you feel so strongly about this issue?
We don't want a violent world. If you're a person who has had a life in hardship from street life, I hear you and I see you. We don't want a violent world. I'm also a Chicano. My father came from Mexico as a migrant worker. I am the oldest son of a migrant worker. I grew up with these workers. I also work in a place that advocates for workers' rights.
Yeah, what is keeping you going, Antonio? You must be absolutely exhausted.
My heart.
How long have you been down here?
I just got here today. Today was my first opportunity to get down here. So.
Yes. So what brought you down?
I wanted to show my support for this. I thought about... I work for a Jewish-assisted living facility. So in my facility, I've got a lot of Holocaust survivors, people who were actual refugees from overseas. And I talked to them a lot, obviously. And I thought about what I wanted to be able to say in 50 years when people ask me what I was doing right now.
How long have you been here today?
Today I've been here for about, I'd say, 3 hours now.
So what's the best part of it been for you? Like, what's most meaningful about being down here?
The best part, I think, was actually the Shabbat service that we had this evening. We had a rabbi get up, and we got to hear them singing and offering evening prayers and everything, and that was a really moving service. Everyone's been so friendly. You can really feel that there's really a lot of positive energy here, and so that's been really nice. A lot of protests, they have a more aggressive energy, but this one really doesn't. You know, you can tell people are kind of settling in for the long haul.
And during the Shabbat, were connections made between the Holocaust and this experience and the ICE actions? And
they talked about Passover. They talked about how we are all accountable for our neighbors and how we need to try to do justice. We need to act in love for our fellow man. We need to remember everybody's humanity, and that is the reason that we're here.
Tuesday, June 26th.
I'm talking to Alyssa Pariah. I've been at the Poor People's Campaign for a little while now.
Yeah, I've been working at the state level in Oregon. The Poor People's Campaign works by the states that come together. So we've done actions, weekly actions in Salem, along with people in the other participating states that have been doing actions at their capital. And that was during the 40 days of Moral Fusion direct action. And that culminated with people from the states all converging on the National Mall in D.C., where we had a tent and held it down for a week. And finished with a mass rally where there were 15,000 people. And there were people from all over the country and across the political spectrum that came together to decry poverty and its impact, and that it is being put on people rather than a sort of personal failing. We know that that's not true, so we were very happy to be able to lift that up in D.C. So it killed me while I was gone that I couldn't be here for Occupy ICE PDX, which is where we're at now, but I'm very happy to be here now and catch up with comrades.
Yeah, and what connections are you making between the Poor People's Campaign and the encampment that's going on here?
Yeah, so one of the pieces that I know often gets sidelined, and this is, you know, through no fault of our own, because we have to do triage right now, so we have to, you know, do occupations to stop people from destroying families and kidnapping children. But I think a point that is often missed when we're talking about this is that the immigrant, you know, as a category of person, is always a scapegoat that's used when a society is in decline or when there is a impending crisis. And that is very clearly what's happening now. The truth of the matter is that the ruling elite in this country love cheap immigrant labor, or should I say cheapened immigrant labor. All labor has dignity, but tell that to a capitalist. So to be able to pit both, to conquer each, is an old tactic that is being used right now to get people that are citizens born in the U.S. to feel that people that are coming from Mexico, Central and South America, and Latin America are somehow a threat. And that is a very vicious tactic that's being used. And it's actually something that keeps us all poor, because if we band together, of course, the ruling elite wouldn't have a chance.
So when did you get back here? How long have you been at the camp?
So I just got here today. This is my first day, and I just got back to Portland, and I'm so happy to be back for as long as we can hold the camp. We know that DHS is doing all sorts of gnarly things right now, looking at us right now with binoculars and probably doing all sorts of preparations to try to stop our movement, but we're going to do what we can to keep it.
Yeah. How would you describe the vibe in the camp right now? What's your sense of the community?
Yeah, I think people are doing their best to lean on one another to keep strength and keep calm, and that is the best that we can do right now, because we know that the state has no scruples. So even though we are not currently under physical attack, I don't think any of us would be surprised if it happened at any moment, because that is the system that we're up against, no doubt.
Yeah. And a lot of these people have been here night after night and are pretty sleep deprived in some cases.
Yes, yes. And thank you to everyone. I'm looking at some of my comrades now who are sleep deprived. And thank you very much for your tireless work. And to the best of your abilities, try to take care of yourself and do the hard work in organizing that we often forget, where you train someone to do what you do. So that if it's an issue of you being sleep deprived or you have an emergency, we want to be able to keep these things going without you if need be. So that means training people up to do the jobs. As soon as I got here today, I was asking how do I help organize the kitchen, the free clothes, the tent, the front table. I want to know how to do all of that so that if one of my comrades who's been doing that work gets exhausted or has an emergency, then we can still be sustainable.
Danielle James.
How are you doing, Danielle?
I'm doing. I've been out here. This is day 9 for me. We're still pretty steadfast, still strong. The homeland security, they come around, they do these raids, and they disturb the peace around here. Dealing with that kind of makes things hard to be around, but like I said, we have a very unwavering group of people around here, a very strong group of people, so we're standing strong, and we're going to be here until we get what we want. It's common sense that this needs to be abolished, essentially. I've been oppressed myself, and so I know what it's like to have people hate you just because of your color and not know who you are and think that you're less than human being. So my heart bleeds for people in that position.
You know, some people might think that might make you less likely to put yourself out like this.
No. I'm human. And at the end of the day, we all bleed red blood.
And this occupation is having a profound effect. I mean, it's mobilized people all over the country. I mean, not that people weren't organizing anyway, but this specific form.
Right, this specific form of protest, I think, needed to happen in order for people who are not paying attention to wake up and realize that there are some problems going on and we need to fix them.
How did you feel when you first heard about them separating the families and some of what they're doing with these kids?
I mean, naturally, it made me sick to my stomach. My heart broke, but wasn't until, not that I didn't care, but the extra hurt and the heavy go down there and do something came when I'm actually hearing audio of these children and seeing the numbers of how many are lost. And I just wonder, like, what about their safety? Like, who's caring about these children? And so this is not my occupation. I'm not an organizer of this occupation. I just came down to help, and I'm planning on being here until it's all over. Imagine how these people are doing us from inside the building and taunting us and antagonizing the protesters out front and shooting them with pepper balls. Like, you're doing all this, I can only imagine. That's, like I said, what about the safety of the kids? Only heard that audio of those children and them making fun of those children because that's what the media wants us to see. But people know when you're sick, you're sick, and sick people need to not be around children. They need to not have positions of power. It's just heartbreaking.
On Thursday, June 28th, following the morning arrests of 8 protesters who'd locked down in front of the ICE building, hundreds of people turned out for the evening vigil. I spoke with activist Olivia, whose parents emigrated from El Salvador to Canada.
Understanding what my parents went through is really important. And with lots of family members who were part of the left, I know what it's like to be carrying that torch.
Yeah, and I mean, when I think a lot of people are like, oh, they feel like, you know, it's just all just started with Trump, right? But you, what the U.S. did in El Salvador in supporting death squads and supporting such extreme repression was, you know, that history. Not enough people know it.
I mean, Clinton, Obama, Reagan, Trump, Bush, they all continued this legacy, and none of them said, you know, this is unethical. All of them carried that torch. And like it or not, we don't have a real party that's advocating against that kind of policy. You have a long legacy of disenfranchising third world countries, removing democratically elected leaders, destroying the left, destroying unions. Do you know why the U.S. got involved in El Salvador? Because people wanted to get paid more for your coffee and your sugar and your bananas. And that's what I was saying up there is, like, every time the same police and the protesters too, I mean everybody, they all use sugar, they all drink coffee, we all have bananas. Thank God I have a banana in the morning. Like, I know it's stupid, but it's a luxury that we have in the United States, not because bananas grow here in Oregon. They don't. Where does your chocolate come from? Like, where does all this food come from? Who picks the fruit that grows here for you? Every meal you have, you are literally enjoying the fruit of immigrant labor and of third world labor. And what do we do to award that? Do you think that forever these people are just going to say, okay, we make the food? There's more of them than there are of you. There's more of us than there are of you. So eventually, people realize that they're being exploited when they have the resources. So El Salvador realized, hey, we have the coffee, we have the sugar, we have all the goods. And these, you know, European people are coming in and taking all of our resources, and they don't give anything back. They give us a few cents and they leave with all of our food. And that's not good for us. We don't get to eat. I mean, the FMLN is the Farabundo Martí Liberación Nacional. So that's like a group based on a man named Farabundo Martí, and he was a labor advocate. And I think it has a lot to do with what's going on in the United States in terms of labor. I mean, today, your Supreme Court delivered a huge blow to labor unions, which is one of the first moves of a fascist government. I mean, the Nazis immediately criminalized unions. The Nazis built camps, and then they built trains to those camps. This is what the United States is doing. They're making so many camps that they have to build unique trains just to go to those camps. They took away children from their parents. This isn't how it begins. This is like three steps in, four steps in. This isn't even a beginning. This is full-on fascism, and people are talking about civility, and they don't want to fight, and they want people to be quiet and nice and vote, and why didn't you vote for Hillary, and all this other stuff. But this is not the time for voting or not voting. If you voted for whoever, come and put yourself on the line. If you believe in what you voted for, come and put yourself on the line. It doesn't matter anymore who voted for what. It matters what you're doing today. I don't live in the past. I live here on the front line.
Yeah, for people who can't see what you mean by that.
I mean, yeah. So here, I don't know who these people voted for, and frankly, I don't care, because a lot of us can't even vote in this country. The people who are doing something to challenge fascism are standing in between me and people like me and fascist forces. These are men dressed like stormtroopers with AK-47s defending detention centers that divide families. That is your enemy, not the leftists, not what you call the Bernie Sanders people, not the Hillary supporters. You need to be unified. Your enemy is the guy with the AK on top of the detention center. And what are you doing to stop him today, physically? Where are you?
This has been Desiree Helligers for the Old Mall Variety Hour.